Hi, I'm Mari Forth.
And I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from unceded Gadigal land and also entertaining Miss Rona today.
And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. Subscribe to our feed by going to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed to get your true crime on Tuesdays, as well as bonus content. We also drop on the main feed on Wednesdays.
So, Mari, what are we talking about today?
Let's open today's file. We watch Fruitcake Fraud, the 2021 documentary from Celia Aniskovic on Discovery Plus in the US and on YouTube in Australia.
Oh, Mari, I have a warning for you, I'm afraid. We had a message from listener Purple Badass Bestie. I said ass, like an American. Listen to me. she tells us, I love the podcast. Thank you. Thank you, Bestie. We love you too.
Exactly.
But I better not hear any fruitcake bashing. Strap in, Bestie.
To help us digest this documentary, we have a special guest, Wanta High School's most notable alumnus from Raleigh, North Carolina, by way of the Amazon and Los Angeles, two-time survivor, zero-time Amazing Race contestant, podcaster, podfather, head of this network, and our boss. It's Rob Cesternino. Hey, Rob. Welcome to Crime Scene. Welcome back, technically, I guess.
Thank you so much. May I ask, what was it about Fruitcake Fraud that made you both say, you know who we should get for this episode? You know who'd be the perfect guest to talk about Fruitcake Fraud? Rob Cesternino.
I mean, it was light. It was fun. It was nutty and it was fruity. Mm-hmm.
And we know you just love talking about food.
Yeah. We're like, perfect fit.
I gotta be honest, I don't think I've ever had fruitcake for real, but I would say I would try it after watching this. I mean, I think that this was good promotion for fruitcake.
No. Sorry, Bestie. I have hideous nightmares about fruitcake. In the old days, mothers used to make fruitcake, and if they were incredibly zealous, they would make it in October. Make it at the beginning of October, and you bake it, and you put it in the airing cabinet or the laundry cabinet. You put it away, and every week you take a cup of brandy and you feed the fruitcake. That's how it's described.
Oh my
God.
You
feed it every week with a cup of brandy so that it soaks in, I was terrified by this
thing
living in our house,
yeah,
being fed. And the smell of the alcohol. Anyway, I'm sorry, Bestie. I do not like fruitcake. However, I don't want to yuck anyone else's yum. And certainly, according to this documentary where we see a lot of people stuffing their faces with it, people like it.
Yeah. So for me, I feel like I've tried, like Rob said, I'm like, I don't think I've tried fruitcake, but I also think I've tried fruitcake. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I've tried joke fruitcake where people give it to you specifically because they know it's going to be nasty. And it's like probably like dollar store fruitcake.
Yeah.
I agree with Rob. Maybe I would try this one. This seems be made with love and care, and the whole town's economy is based off of this fruitcake. So I would try this fruitcake more than, I guess, just the one up the street.
Yeah. Sarah, did you know about all of the smoke between the fruitcake industry and Johnny Carson?
I did not. I was absolutely delighted because Johnny's on my side.
Mm-hmm. Fruitcake is gross. Did you know that?
There's only one fruitcake.
It's bad.
Yeah. But as Bob McNutt tells us, Johnny's gone. We're still here.
Yeah, really dancing on Johnny Carson's grave.
Bob McNutt, the nicest man in the entire world. A bit rude about Johnny Carson.
Also, is Bob McNutt the fake name or once he got into the fruitcake industry?
Alias.
So perfect. I mean, he is the president and CEO of Collins Street Bakery, and that is like the perfect nut. No, that's right. The perfect nut. The perfect name for the CEO of a fruitcake company.
Yeah.
Now, before we dive into the crime, Rob, what's your true crime origin story? Do you like it? Do you watch it, or do you just entertain it for our sake?
So, I mean, I feel like that I'm always engaged whenever I come across like one of these properties. And I feel like that they're almost always done well for the most part. And I feel like that, like back when Serial was on, like, I feel like, you know, I was very much like in the caught up in the craze. At that point,
would that
in time.
Be Serial, the podcast that you beat out for an award in a podcast?
Sure. And so I like, I feel like it's always good, but I don't listen to a lot of true crime podcasts other than, you know, with some notable exceptions. Yes.
Well, that's good to know. Like we said, we love to have different guests and different perspectives on here. You do not have to love like murder to be on our show. And this is why we picked a light and fun.
No murders in the building.
No murders. We did have a list that we went down with for you. It's like no murder, no assault, no dismemberment. Nope. I said, don't we have a fun heist of some sort? And then we came up with fruitcake fraud. It was like perfection.
Yeah. And well, we also, I almost wanted to wait until they dropped the Army Hammer documentary to have you offer that. Yeah. There's a rumor that that's in the works, but it's no deadline in sight. So maybe we'll have you come back on for that. But I want to hear about that because that sounds like it's going to be like nuts bananas because it's not just and about him. It's bananas. About his whole
sounds like a fruitcake. Yeah.
Fruitcake. Yeah. All right. So let's get to the crime. So the family owned and operated Collins Street Bakery has been making fruitcakes and pecan pies in Corsicana, Texas since 1896. Whew, long time. They ship their fruitcakes in the distinctive tins all over the world, including to the set of The Godfather, where you can actually see one on the kitchen counter. They are the largest fruit cake company in the world. In 2005, an accountant, Sandy Jenkins, working at the bakery on a $50,000 a year salary, began embezzling what would amount to $17 million, which he and his wife spent on jewelry, watches, clothes, cars, property, and travel. Despite $30 million in sales per year, management couldn't figure out why they were not making money. They had to stop staff bonuses, even lay off employees. It wasn't until 2013 that Symmetric Walker began working at the bakery in the finance department. Almost unable to believe what she was seeing, she unraveled Sandy's scheme. FBI Special Agent Christine Edson was brought in, and Sandy and his wife, Kay, were arrested and charged with crimes surrounding the embezzlement. So overall, Rob, let me go to you first. What did you think about this documentary, just generally?
So I thought that there were definitely some interesting points overall with the case. But I felt like that they kind of tell you up front, like basically like what the crime is. It wasn't really a whodunit,
right?
You know, that there was no other suspect. Basically, they told you what happened. And then they basically like told you very quickly, like how he got away with it. And then it was just sort of like, okay, well, what did he buy? We spent a lot of time on like, what did he spend? Like that was like the big mystery. What did he spend $17 million on?
Mm-hmm.
Not even exactly. That nice stuff.
No. This was a very, very much a paint by numbers documentary, which I think, it's very interesting because, you know, we pick our stuff off of like we watch the trailers, we go off recommendations and stuff like that. And I feel like the trailer almost had more mystery and suspense in it than the documentary did. But other than that, if you're just in the mood for just a regular, like, here's what happens with some fun B-roll, this is exactly what this property is. Sarah, what did you think about this documentary?
Yeah, it's very straightforward. It's very straight down the line. It's more a postcard than a story. Mm-hmm. It's like a snapshot of the company and the town. Yes. Symmetric Walker is our queen. She's this young black
girl. Give her
girl
a raise.
Who walks into a company, youngest raises. Employer, potentially the only, certainly the only black person that we see in the management and executive branch. And she discovers that her boss has been embezzling. And she does talk about being frightened. I mean, that's the dark. It's a very jolly documentary. It's a very jolly crime documentary. Yeah. But there are a couple of dark strands, and one of them is her fear at having to accuse, as she says, a person of another race of this crime. And is she going to be supported by management? I mean, they don't really delve into it, but she herself brings up race. And I was glad that she did, because otherwise it could have been smoothed over. Oh, she found it and it was all very straightforward, because I think for her it wasn't straightforward. And when Sandy was sort of on the run and they didn't know where he was, she does talk about being scared. And I thought, wow, that in this sort of jolly, fruity, nutty, light-toned documentary, it is like a little layer of mold in there. And I always, you know, appreciate that reality coming in.
Yeah, like you said, she was young, she was Black, she was completely new to the company, and she stumbles on a multi-million dollar embezzlement scheme, and then she has to be like, that her boss is perpetrating. So, you know, not all heroes wear capes. I like that they gave her her flowers, like near the end of the documentary, saying like, if she, you know, she's the real hero, if she hadn't have discovered the embezzlement,
but well, probably could have kept going. Yeah. Forget flowers. Like, what did they give her? Like, I don't want to hear about a lifetime supply of fruitcake.
Right. Like, they should have given her something tangible.
She saved the whole company and got them back like $5 million that was stolen.
Yep. So hopefully the jury's still out. Maybe hopefully they bought her at least a big steak dinner or something at the very least.
Or at least a horsehair mattress.
$39,000. Wow. Oh, I mean, she's now VP of finance. So,
okay.
Yay!
Make her the president of the company.
Give her the company.
Yeah.
You know, she does say that maybe one day she'll be the Jerry Grimmett, who's the VP of operations and the oldest employee. I think he might actually be the oldest person in Corsicana.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So speaking of which, so this documentary gave me Devoured vibes. Like, this could have just been an episode of Devoured. If everybody's listening, hopefully you checked out our Devoured episode a few episodes back. But basically, it's a food crime. The documentary was an hour and 38 minutes. I truly think they could have got it down to a nice chunkable, like, straight up hour, to be quite honest. I don't know. There wasn't anything like overtly that I was like, oh, this needed to be included. I think they succinctly told the case. And like we said, there was no real mystery. We got like the first 10 minutes of it was talking about fruitcakes and how people eat fruitcakes and all
the
of
town.
That. The town. Well, yeah, of course, Corsicana.
Fruitcake strategically placed all around the town.
Yeah. And then we went directly into, oh, this is what happened. And then, oh, they found out that he had been stealing. Oh, then he left. And then, oh, wait, now the FBI is called in. Like, this really could have been a part of another series. I don't know if it needed to be its own standalone documentary. What did we think about, we didn't have any reenactments. We just had a lot of B-roll, like, or was it reenactment B-roll? It was just, it was a lot. Sarah, what did you think about the brightly colored B-roll?
Look, I agree with you. It could have been, you know, an hour is generous if you cut out the marvelous Lisa Goines, who is in the exclusive book club and loves tradition, and the B-roll and people who we don't know eating fruitcake. But I was sort of, once I realized what it was, I was kind of in for the ride. I thought, fine, just serve it to me and I'll sit here and eat it. And part of the sitting and eating is being provided with enormous amounts of B-roll. Like, and what I did like about, you know, I'm a process nerd. I loved seeing how you make millions of fruitcakes, of fruitcakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, at Christmas, they go from, what did he say, 10 to 20 a week to 10 to 20,000 a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was wondering, where do you get $17 million? I think that's where.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was curious about, like, what do they do with the 10 to 20 fruitcakes a day the rest of the year? Like, who's buying a fruitcake today?
Corsicana. Well, then, you know what? We can't even say that, because I've already seen people breaking out their pumpkin spice latte candles. So some people don't need the holidays.
ESL season is sneaking up.
Or it's sooner and sooner, just like Black Friday. It's sooner and sooner. So maybe Christmas you don't creep. Need a time. Yeah, maybe you don't need a time to enjoy fruitcake.
Maybe it's purple badass bestie buying one a week.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, so I like the tone of the documentary. I thought it was very upbeat. We did, speaking of Lisa Goines, she was one of the talking heads. We got plenty of talking heads as well. We got most of the people from the company. Like you said, Lisa, a lot of residents of Corsicana. This is what this really, truly was, just like the Devoured episode. And it talks about how important this factory is to that town. And I like that they got the Corsicana residents in on this. What did you think, Rob?
Yeah, we got to learn about all the different people in the town. And they talked about how, like, in this town, there's a lot of gossip. Everybody's gossiping about what's going on at the factory. And, you know, you don't tell anybody a secret because then everybody knows it. So, you know, a lot of background about Corsicana. I was wondering who's in Dallas? Who's close enough there? Could Asia go give us a scouting report?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know which one is closer between her and Chappelle. One of y'all go get us a fruitcake.
Yeah.
You can get it online. I already looked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, those cookies, they also make cookies. Those cookies look pretty good, but they don't ship those, unfortunately. But I wonder if part of the documentary is trying to drive traffic to their online shop so they can get back some of this $17 million. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well, they did full participation.
Yeah.
Like with the show. So mm-hmm. I think it was like very much a commercial, an infomercial for Collins Street Bakery at times.
And that's what they said at the end. They said this is definitely going to help. And I don't blame them. I thought it was it's an interesting enough crime. It truly, truly is. Mostly because the first thing we're led to believe is like, okay, we're talking about the fruitcake and its impact on the company. We then get Symmetric finding out the crime, and then people finding out, oh, it was Sandy. And the first thing we get is, oh, Sandy's so unassuming. You would have never known. And then the next thing we get is, oh, but yeah, him and his wife did like to buy a lot of stuff. And then the next like 40 minutes is just outlining all of the stuff that they bought.
Yeah. That was crazy that it was like they took private jets and like nobody ever like questioned like the controller of the company that's like, oh, is hemorrhaging money. Nobody ever looked at this guy who makes $50,000 a year, and he would come in with like all of his jewels and furs and all of these like trappings and like come to my house and look at my art. Yeah. And nobody ever was like, boy, I don't know how he does it.
Kay certainly tried to her best to cover it up because she had a new Jaguar every year, but she made sure it was the same color so people didn't know it was a new one. I mean, come on. They knew they were hemorrhaging money. They were making $30 million a year, and yet at the end of the year, that was turnover, and then they hadn't even made as much as they thought they were going to make. They looked at, you know, were they spending too much on advertising? Were there some systems that were incorrect? Were they wasting ingredients? And all this time, this guy is coming in and saying, here, have this bottle of wine. My wife in her furs is going to hop off on the private jet that I've got the photograph of. I mean, he had various stories, all of which were incredibly shallow, about a trust fund from his father and then...
But he still works at the fruitcake factory. Doesn't miss a day.
He loves it. Mm-hmm. He loves it. Mm-hmm. There was a funeral story, a funeral parlor story with its uncle.
Inherited money.
Inherited money. That, I mean, the so changing thin. Stories should have, it was so thin. And this is where I think the setup of Corsicana and the setup, the setup of who are the people who work at Collins Street Bakery works. Because otherwise, I mean, we're mocking them. Look, it was very painful for all these very real people who went through a very real betrayal.
Right. Uh-huh.
We are mocking them slightly, but I think one of the strengths of the documentary is to just say, just look at these people, just meet them, and you will understand why the last thing they thought was that a trusted employee would be stealing from them.
Yeah, but also let's look at this list of stuff that they bought. They bought $3 million worth of jewelry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Sarah mentioned, Kay had a new Jaguar every year. I think when the FBI agent went to interview the people at Jaguar and at Mercedes and at Lexus, they had all these different cars. They said they buy cars more than people come and get oil changes. Like, mm-hmm. that is... how does nobody bat an eyelash at that? I just don't understand. Again, the private jets, they would fly to Austin just for lunch. I think they said that's like an $80,000, $8,000 yeah. lunch, just yeah. to get the fuel the private jet and go.
And at Neiman Marcus, the personal shopper ran out of things to sell Kay, mm-hmm. whose nickname was Cupcake. He was Fruitcake and she was Cupcake. So people were seeing that money pass through their businesses from this couple. And mm-hmm. with the gossip that we're told goes on, and certainly Lisa Goines is in her element talking about tradition and gossip, nobody dropped Bob McNutt a hint?
Yeah, very interesting because Lisa talks about how Kay was a part of their social club, their book club. They tried to use this money to make friends. They made a lot of friends using this money. That's kind of why people didn't ask where it came from. And Kay would provide the wine for their book club for like 2 years because mm-hmm. she was flying to Napa and bringing it back wholesale.
Yeah,
like it's so interesting.
Well, the show also tries to like, and I don't think I was crazy about this, that it was because they tried to make it seem like the main guy, Sandy, didn't have any friends. Nobody wanted to be friends with Sandy. So he had to do this to sort of like, if he like was able to embezzle all the money, then he could make friends and people would, and that's why they were so like garish and like showy about like what they were buying, because then they thought that people would want to be friends with them. And so that and they really, they even like ended it like and if you see somebody that doesn't have friends, you should be nice to them, because then you'll stop them from, you know, things would have turned out differently for Sandy. People would have been nicer to him.
Embezzle? Yeah. So they said that they spent like $120,000 a month. So their house in Corsicana was like $200,000. I think they said was worth $200,000. Yeah. But then they had a house in New Mexico. Was it New Mexico or was it Arizona?
Santa Fe,
Arizona. Okay. Santa Fe, New Mexico. Oh, my God. Sorry. Yeah. that was worth $750,000.
I mean, one of the things they got them on was the mortgage papers that they signed for the Santa Fe property, where they said that Sandy was earning $25,000 a month when he was earning $50,000 a year. I mean, it must be said that Kay didn't know anything about it, Rob. Mm-hmm. Kay knew nothing about
it. She didn't know anything.
No, she knew nothing. But she co-signed the mortgage papers, and that's one of the things they got her on. The only thing she finally admitted was that, no, she didn't know anything about it, but she suspected that maybe it was bad money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in between the time that we get the reporting of the bad checks to, like, the police, the Corsicana police were basically like, oh, okay, we figured out that he sent checks through the mail. So now it's the FBI. It really made it sound like, which I agree, Corsicana police were like, whew, let's give it to the FBI. The FBI rolls in and they start their investigation. Meanwhile, Sandy is gone. They fired him. Sarah?
I was just going to say, Mari and I had a fascinating conversation with a crime scene investigator who would not reveal what agency he worked for. So it was all very cloak and dagger. And that'll be dropping on Inside Job in the next couple of weeks. But one of the really interesting, he said a lot of very, very interesting things. But one of the things that really caught my ear was he said, on television in dramas, there's always a jurisdiction argument where no, I want to keep the case. No, we're coming in and taking the case. He said it is the complete opposite in the real world, that you are just like thrilled when somebody
you
comes
take
in.
It. Yeah.
You take it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was wild that he, like, they found out, like, oh, hey, $17 million. And so they fired him. And then that was kind of it. Like, he wasn't charged with anything. Like, you feel like that if he would have just, like, packed up his stuff and left at that point, like, you think he would have been fine.
That is, exactly. So you still $17 million. Your job brings you in. They fire you. But you're technically right now, you have no charges. You still have all this money. Why are you not in Bali?
I would. Where is your bug out bag, sir?
I'm in Bali. Where else has no extradition? That's where I'm going. Immediately. But instead of bugging out, like Rob said, I think where did they end up finding them? It was just in Austin, I think it was.
Well, they went to stay with their daughter in Austin. They realized that because of something that happens at a lake, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They realized that they were there.
Yes, because then they threw all of like the Rolexes and expensive watches into the lake.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They found 39 watches, expensive watches in this lake, along with a gold bar.
This criminal is not a very good criminal.
Sandy is not smart, but the watches were discovered by somebody. I think the man was like an off duty police officer.
He was a campus police.
Police.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that man is very honorable because if I found 16 watches in a lake, and I think he said he took one to a pawn shop to see, and what did he say? It was like worth
$30,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would have been like, yeah, police, I found 10 watches.
I found 5 watches.
Like, this is all of the evidence I found. Maybe you guys should go search for some more. They searched and they found in total, it ended up being the 39 watches and a gold bar.
But your question was, where did they go? They went and stayed with their daughter. Like,
yeah,
come and find us. And then they went back to their house in Corsicana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for three weeks after he was fired, they left, they came back. They did not realize, I guess they didn't realize that the FBI was on their tail. They clearly didn't because they went back. The whole town knew, but they didn't because the FBI did go to their house to like look for stuff, rummage through all their stuff in the house. All the town was out there watching. After the 3 weeks, they did take them into custody. I think they took him into custody, and then Kay was like, kind of like, they still were trying to figure out what they can charge her with. Mm-hmm. And all in all, he got charged with conspiracy. Let me just make sure I have this. It was conspiracy to commit wire fraud. It was lying on a mortgage statement. And it was one other.
And this transfer money laundering.
Money laundering. Okay.
This idea that because you buy something with the money you stole, that you've laundered it. I think they were trying to find what to apply.
Yes, exactly. And they were also, again, trying to get Kay on things, but they had divorced almost immediately. Kay was trying to pretend like
she didn't run. Know. She cut and run. She yeeted out of there.
Yes. Yeah.
Divorced poor Sandy.
Friendless Sandy.
The funny thing is, if they had stayed married, then they wouldn't have been able to legally testify against each other.
These are not clever.
Smarter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so after that, the bakery was still, they were still in dire straits. So they did have an estate sale. So the whole town went out to the estate sale to buy the tchotchkes, and that's when we learned of the $39,000 horsehair mattress. Rob, would you have gone to this estate sale?
Yeah, I'd like to go check it out. Like, this turned into a roast very quickly of like that these people have no taste. They bought all ugly stuff. If you stole $17 million, that you could buy a lot nicer things than they bought. Everything in their house was all trash.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. They ask, the documentary makers ask, various of the talking heads that we've come to be friends with in the hour, the employees of the bakery. They say, what would you do with $17 million? Nobody has any particularly good answers, but the two answers I was fascinated by were the FBI agent, Christine Edson. She said, I refuse to answer that question. She said it very nicely. And when they asked Symmetric, she said, I could think about things, but in this context, sitting where I am, I don't want to think about it. And I thought, oh, the heart of the beating heart of this documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She has the sensitivity. Speaking of sensitivity, the revelation of Sandy's dying by suicide to one of the executives on camera, is this a misstep to keep that in?
Yeah, that was very interesting. I don't think it was played for like views or entertainment. I really just think they didn't realize that she didn't know. And her reaction wasn't very, you know, over the top or you know, she did seem sad, but it didn't seem like, you know, too overdone. So, you know, I didn't mind them leaving it in there. I didn't have any real feelings towards it. Rob, what did you think?
It was jarring to me that I had to go back, like rewind 15 seconds, like, wait, hold on, say what? Like, yeah, did you know Sandy committed suicide? Like, oh. No, I did not. I was not aware of that. You know, so that was a surprise because they didn't really set that up. It was in like the last 2 minutes. It wasn't like in an end card. And then I felt like they really didn't give you anything about what was Kay doing? What was her reaction? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just felt like that was like very like tacked on at the end.
So did she not know he completed suicide, or did she not know that he was dead? Like, what was the...
Well, the question that was asked was, you know, what were your feelings when you heard? And they used the phrase committed suicide, of course, for you to say died by suicide or died completed. Yeah. And it's heartbreaking, her reaction, but I just think it's, for me, that was too jarring. Something they could have dealt with in a different way, because they do have Bob McNutt, the nicest man in the entire world, you know, reading an apology letter from Sandy. He's just about to get out of jail. He gets 10 years and Kay gets 5, and the town is very surprised, as are the employees of Collins Street Bakery, as are we all, that they are such short sentences. But Sandy was about to get out, and he writes this apology letter and he says, let me get out and I'll start paying you back, which is, you know, the other $12 million that you're missing.
Right.
And that he dies by suicide just before he gets out. So I think there was a different way to do it. I think the documentary makers forgot the tone that they had set for the documentary with this revelation. It was distasteful, I thought.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I was confused about. That's why I just thought that maybe she didn't know how he died, but knew that he did die. So are we saying that she didn't know that he had passed away at all?
I think she knew he died, just not how.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, I agree that like the documentary itself did feel like it kind of had like a stopgap, like just at the end, it's done there. He was in prison. And then, you know, it was not as lighthearted as the rest of the tone, but it, you know, that was it. That was the documentary. It wasn't bad. Like you said, it wasn't bad. It was just there was no twists or turns. There was no trying to figure out who was responsible. It was very, very cut and dry. And if you are a fan of cut and dry, I think this is not bad.
There's a call to action at the end.
Oh, right.
Yes. Please, I mean, not everything's been found. Are you going to Corsicana, Rob, to start digging for treasure?
Yeah, I guess get the snorkeling equipment. I guess drain the lake to see if we can go find a watch or a gold bar.
Will you be turning it in when you find it? Well, actually, they're all, honestly, I don't like to be rude, but their stuff was very ugly. The cars were nice. The Jaguars were very nice. But,
I mean, but even like one of their lawyers was like, when they found out that like, oh, he threw a platinum wristwatch in the garbage. Like, okay, can you tell me which garbage can you threw that in?
Yeah. And they never explained why they did that. Could they explain that?
I think he was panicking. He wasn't thinking. I mean, Brett Stalkup, who we haven't mentioned yet, he comes in towards the end, about 7/8 of the way through, and he is a shot of adrenaline for us all. Brett Stalkup is Sandy's lawyer, and he tells it how it is, and he has a particular opinion about Sandy, and he does his best for Sandy, but he says to Sandy, you're going to be serving time, so let's start now. Yeah. Which is fantastic advice. It's like saying, you're done. Let's get a deal and let's start the sentence. And the fact that Sandy got only 10 years, I think, is a testament to Brett. But he tells the story of hearing about the watches being thrown in a bin and somebody asking for a map.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Rob, do you believe it? Kay only got 5 years probation. That really rubbed a lot of the Corsicana residents the wrong way. Do you think that was a justified sentence for Kay, or do you think she knew a little bit more than she let on?
Well, I kind of feel like that based off of like what he got, I guess it's fair, because if he only got 10 years and he was the one actually committing the crime and she was sort of like the willing accomplice, I guess half of what he got sounds reasonable, but I think it just more shines a light on that. I mean, 10 years for 17 million. I think a lot of people would say, okay, could I just get like maybe 1 year for 1.7 million? I would do, I don't need 10 for 17. Could I get maybe two for 3.5?
Yeah, they really did not think that the 10 years for Sandy matched the 17 million stolen, and that Kay just got 5 years probation, not even in prison. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sarah, what do you think about Kay's?
Well, I have, and this is not a knock on the documentary. I'm glad that they highlighted it and left it in, but we get the narrative of Kay's in charge. Kay wears the pants. Kay doesn't love Sandy. Kay's using Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe, but there's a. I mean, much though I love the narration of Lisa Goines, there's a whole class thing that's happening here where she talks about, you know, the book club that was started by her great aunt, and you have to apply to be part of the book club, and she knows ladies have applied twice and not been allowed in. And the story of Kay sort of ringing them to say, oh, where do I send my membership money? And them saying, oh, as if we would take your membership money. So there is a story of class here going on in Corsicana, and that's why I like the inclusion of Lisa Goines. And I think that there's a real looking down on Kay. She was a cook, and that she wanted to buy her way into the social scene.
Yeah.
And that's very sad. Why don't you just let her in?
Yeah. Know? Yeah. And it is heavily implied that most of the stuff that was bought was like 4K. They did find a ledger as well of all of the jewelry and stuff that they bought with her, like the amounts and all of that. It's heavily implied that Kay at least might have been the reason for getting all the money and stuff like that. So very interesting. I mean, truly, she may have been his motivation, but when it all boils down to it, he was the one, you know, making the checks. His system was kind of confusing. Maybe if any of our like accounting friends, you understand, Sarah?
Yeah, I'm not an accountant, and I don't do maths, but Symmetric tells us that this is how you do it. She gives us a little primer on how to defraud your company, except as she says, Sandy was the one receiving the invoices and paying the invoices and reconciling the accounts, and she said that's an accounting no-no. Oh, thank you. So what he was doing was he would make an invoice to one of their suppliers. He would draw the check to that supplier that would be registered. He would then cancel that check and write a check for that amount to wherever he wanted it to go, whether it would be American Express or wherever Capital he was sending the checks. Mm-hmm. He would, so when that check landed, the amount was there because the amount was reconciled against, I don't know, United Nuts Incorporated or whatever one of their suppliers was. So it wasn't a very complex scheme. The reason that he got away with it is there were no audits. They never had an audit. And the same person was accounts receivable and accounts payable and reconciling the accounts. And as Sandy's lawyer, Brett, tells us, if he'd stopped just before Symmetric arrived, no one would ever have known.
Wow. Wow. Well, let's go into our ratings. So we're going to rate out of 5 magnifying glasses if we would suggest this documentary. Rob, how many magnifying glasses are you going to rate Fruitcake Fraud out of a possible 5?
Okay. I'm going to give Fruitcake Fraud, I'll give it 2 magnifying glasses. It was fine. It was, as you said, Mari, cut and dry. But as we all know, nothing is worse than a dry fruitcake. Okay? It needs to be properly watered. Right, Sarah?
Fed with brandy.
Yes. So, I mean, this was fine. But really, this could have been an email, Fruitcake Fraud. They said it all up. And then we just like spent like a lot of time of just like, just talking about like what it's like at the company. Like we went to cookie court and heard about like how they grade. Like, okay, what does this have to do with anything good? Like, are we just talking about cookie court because he went to court?
Weird. Yep.
Yeah.
I get that.
So it's like some asides, and maybe if it was the holidays, maybe I'd be in a little bit more of a festive mood. But yeah, this was fine. It wasn't bad, but you know, just not the most spicy documentary we've ever seen.
We'll give you a disembowelment next time.
right. And Sarah, how many magnifying glasses will you give this episode?
Well, I mean, I agree, Rob. I'm actually going to give it a 3 because for me, it's well made. If I take myself out of the crime itself, I think it's very well made. I appreciated the talking heads talking directly to me. I love that. Mm-hmm. I don't like this side on profile looking off from the camera. I think that it gets 3. I mean, because of the slight sourness, the sour notes that they put in with Symmetric, and also with the implied criticism of the classism of the town, and the fact that under all that jolliness, there can be, you know, the loneliness of Sandy, always, you know, that he never quite fitted in and nobody reached out to him. So I think that there were enough threads there. It's very straightforward. It's a mood, I think. As a true crime document, it could have been a 45-minute episode of Devout. But I'm going to give it a solid 3. How about you, Mari?
Yeah, I'm going to split the difference. This is the ratings I came in. I had thought about coming into it, and nothing in our conversation really dissuade me from it. So I was going to give it a 2.5 magnifying glasses because it is an easy watch. It's like one of those things that you can put it on while you're cleaning. I don't know how anybody else, if anybody else listens to true crime shows while they're cleaning like I do on a weekend, but it's it truly is very easy. You turn it on, you can listen to it. You don't really have to look at it because like we said, it's like 80% B-roll, and you just listen to the story, and it's perfectly digestible like that. I did not rewatch it, mostly because I had no desire to, because there was nothing that I missed the first go round. You know, it was so simple, very simply told, that I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I don't really need a second go round on this. So, you know, watchability, rewatchability cuts that kind of in half for me. So definitely a property if you're just in for true crime, but don't feel like listening about like murders or anything like that gruesome for the day. So not too bad. Rob, do you have any recommendations for our listeners?
So I don't have any real great true crime recommendations, but I will say that if you are a fan of the Better Call Saul, like I am, and it's very interesting final season. They did a like mockumentary about Saul Goodman, aka Jimmy McGill, that was part of like the final season, like promotional materials that they did an episode of American Greed, which I guess is a real show.
Yeah, it is.
And they did an episode. It's only like about like 10 to 15 minutes, but they did one as if that they were covering the story of Jimmy McGill. Really, which cool. Is a very fun one, which is it's on YouTube, and my DVR recorded it. So if you're looking for a fun, like mini true crime show, That was a good one. And they have a lot of like the actors in character talking about they're giving confessionals about Jimmy McGill.
That's funny. I like that. American Greed is a very, very good show. I think it's on CNN here, I think, in the States. Yeah.
And this could have been an episode of that.
Yeah, this exactly. This could have been fallen on under so many umbrellas of just your one shot docuseries style ID Discovery shows. Sarah, what about you? Recommendations?
I have some recommendations from our listeners. First of all, Ollie recommends Sirius, which is a four-part French documentary about the cult, the Order of the Solar Temple. So we better get Gia on that on Cult Watch. She is our official cult correspondent. He went so far as to rate it. He gave it 3.5 magnifying glasses. So thanks for that, Ollie. You can see it on SBS in Australia. I'm not sure how you can see it in the US, but I will attempt to find out and put that in the show notes. Yes, you don't get everything, America. Sometimes we get things.
Shots fired.
Yeah.
And listener Jean says, thanks for the podcast, exclamation mark. I really enjoy listening, exclamation mark. Thanks, Jean. She goes on to recommend a four-part documentary that not only Mari and I like, but past and future guest of the pod, Kirsten McInnes, also recommends. And it's the four-part MLM expose, Lula Rich, from 2021. And that's available on Prime. So great recommendations, listeners. We love hearing your recommendations. Please do send them through. And what about you, Mari? Have you got a recommendation today?
Yes, I also am going to pass on a recommendation. Josh Green, friend of the pod, suggested Doomsday Mom, the Lori Vallow story. This is like a Lifetime, like the kind of Lifetime coverage of it. But just look up like Lori Vallow. I hope I said that right. Let me make sure. But that case is basically, it was a big case in 2019 where this mom and her boyfriend basically like killed her two kids. And then they were like in charge of like a doomsday cult. And then they were like scamming people. They somehow found them in Hawaii. It's a very interesting case. And you could honestly Google like the 48 hours or Dateline episodes. It was all over the place back in 2019, but it's a Lori Vallow story, Doomsday Mom, the Lori Vallow story for a Lifetime. Thank you, Josh. Thank you for the recommendation. We really appreciate that. At Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP. That's S-E-E-N. Or email us at crimescenerhap@gmail.com. Rob, what do you have going on? Where can people find you?
Well, of course, you catch everything I'm doing over at robhasawebsite.com. Of course, everything we have going on with Big Brother. I know you're both fans of The Claim to Fame, which is also a little bit of, it's not true crime, but it is a mystery of where you are guessing along with the show.
How do we get our friends to watch it? Because I have appealed to many friends, say this is a great show, unbelievably good. You won't think to watch it. So let me tell you to watch it. And as soon as I start to explain it, they'll go, nah. How do we get people to watch it? It's so good.
I mean, I don't know. That if you like a show that you could play along with and guess along with who the famous people are, that's like a part of the fun.
Yeah. Who done it? Who is it? Yeah. Who is it?
Yeah. So it's a mystery, but also, you know, that there's also a game going on. So it's sort of like, you know, if you are somebody who's like in the world of watching like the Survivors and Big Brothers of the world, then this also has like a little bit of like a Masked Singer element to it.
Yeah, Masked Singer. Yep, I agree. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree.
What else? Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think that hopefully, you know, if you want more reality TV recaps, I will have, you can hear me on the wrestling wrap up this week as well. That should already be up. So we'll talk about the state of professional wrestling in the month of August. And so excited to get in another podcast with Mari this week.
Yes, I'm so glad we did that. So, Sarah, where can the people find you?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carradine. You can catch me over on post-show recaps discussing Bullet Train with Grace Leader and Phil Thompson. And I recently guested on Partners in Crime Media's Law and Order podcast, which is called These Are Their Stories. We discussed an episode of SVU called In Loco Parentis. It was an absolute dream come true for me to be on that podcast. I couldn't quite believe I was on it, upright and making some sort of sense. I haven't heard it yet. I was so fangirling that I actually sang their theme song to them. they looked a That's little nice. Shocked, and then I got it right too, which was like halfway through. I thought, well, don't F it up. And then they threatened to use that instead of the pre-recorded theme songs. I hope for listeners' sakes they didn't do that. And for subscribers to Crime Scene, we have a bonus series of interviews, Inside Job, conversations with people who know crime, the law and justice from the inside. And the latest one, which just dropped, is The Private Investigator. We had a great chat to Lara Bricker, former private investigator, current pet detective, and crime novelist. So that's a lot of fun. If you're you don't have to do anything but subscribe to the Crime Scene feed and you will get Inside Job as a bonus. What about you, Mari? Where can the people find you?
Well, of course, you can always find me and Matt Scott and then this week, Rob, on the Wrestling Wrap Up podcast, where we bring you the highlights of wrestling. You don't need to watch. We'll break it all down for you. We'll provide a handy playlist for you to watch along or just listen to us and our great guests. So just go to robhasawebsite.com/wrestlingfeed to subscribe to the Wrestling Wrap Up podcast. You can also catch us on the Rob Has a Podcast YouTube page by searching Wrestling Wrap Up on that. And so you get to see all the pretty pictures as well. Sarah, what do we have coming up for next week?
Next time on Crime Scene, we're breaking down I Just Killed My Dad.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Perhaps you would have preferred that one. Guest Sarah D. Bunting will be with us again. Now, she'll also be sharing one of her areas of expertise by giving us the D.B. Cooper Minute. Apparently, it will be everything you need to know about D.B. Cooper in 1 minute. Rob, you and Chappelle watched D.B. Cooper recently.
Yes, I didn't know that there was that much that you needed to know about D.B. Cooper at this point.
It'll be more a rundown of every property, every crazy theory, because apparently there are plenty. And it's a bit of it's not necessarily a burden that she wants to know everything about D.B. Cooper, but she does.
Yes. I did ask T-Bird recently if she had any information because she is Teresa Cooper, but she did not know anything about it. She works in the airline industry, but she didn't have any updates on it.
Here we go. We can
add it to the list.
Yes, it'll be a quick breakdown of all the various conspiracy theories, of which there are many, and recommendations of the good properties, if any, to watch or read or listen to about D.B. Cooper. But mainly we'll be talking about I Just Killed My Dad, which drops on Netflix on August the 9th. So you'll need to be quick to watch that and then send us your comments and questions, which we can fold into the podcast.
Thanks, Rob, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So glad to have you. Anytime. Next time, maybe something a little bit more suspenseful.
Something a bit spicier, perhaps.
Bloody. Okay. A little bit more bloody. We'll get you something bloody. Will from America for his theme music.
Yeah, well.
Tricky Rice for the graphics and Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Until next time, case
closed.